Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me once again this week, the Monkey King to my Shadow King, it's Brian. How you doing tonight, Brian?
Good, Scott. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's amazing. It's not hot or humid out, really. I mean, it's been pouring rain today, but I did have the AC pumping in this room a little while ago because I always have to turn it off before we start recording, because otherwise, you know, with all the other audio malfunctions, you know, associated with this podcast, you'd also have the AC blasting. So I literally turned the AC off, I don't know, 2 minutes ago, and I'm already feeling beads of sweat forming on my fat forehead over here. So I don't know if it's the temperature in your place or, you know, God telling me, yeah, you really do need to lose a few. So we are here tonight to both catch up with the previous chapter as well as close the book on the final chapter of Legion. So this will be the final Legion podcast, final time we'll be getting together to talk about this show, at least. Also be the final time I'll be playing that stupid 8-bit theme from my iPhone into the microphone. I guarantee you there are any number of people who, like, maybe saw this podcast link on Twitter or something and went, "Ooh, I'll check that out." And like 10 seconds into it, like, "What kind of crap is this?" And I've turned it off. Either that or they left it on thinking, "Oh, maybe it's little kids doing it." You know? And then all of a sudden they hear my voice like, "That ain't a little kid." And they switch it off. Anyway, yeah, we were not able to record last week. I think, I know you were traveling, right?
I was on vacation last week.
You basically pulled a Dan on me last week.
I did.
But I kind of knew that was going to happen. I do remember you telling me that. I thought maybe there was an outside chance of a late Thursday night thing. But when I hadn't heard from you, I figured, all right, we'll slap them together and do a mega final podcast about it. That doesn't mean it's going to be a 5-hour podcast, people. Don't worry. But we are going to try to cover Chapter 26, maybe without talking about Chapter 27. I don't know if that's even possible. That I think it's the kind of thing I feel we'll set out to do, but I anticipate we're still going to slip and start talking about the finale. Should we wait until we are talking about the finale before we start popping out with our opinions of it? I feel like we should.
I think that's fine.
Yeah. You know, work a little bit of suspense into the podcast, I guess. Because obviously, once we're talking about the final episode, I think at that point, we can pass, for lack of a better way to put it, pass judgment on not just the finale itself, but the overall season, series, call it what you will, since this is the, you know, the period on that sentence, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think it was just sort of dumb luck that the last two episodes sort of work as one episode. Once I finished the finale, I kind of saw how they fit together. And really, you and I were talking off air before we started that we both, I think, sort of felt that way, that, you know, 26 and 27 are sort of two parts of one story.
Yeah.
Told.
If they had decided to run this as one gigantic 2-hour plus episode, it could have gone seamlessly as one episode, it felt like to me. It really felt, you know, like part one, part two. As opposed to like an episode beforehand, you know, when they did the whole, you know, when they did like the flashback kind of thing or the thing with Sid and her having her second childhood. And that, if it had been an episode like that, and then this one, the finale rather, that might have been a little trickier. But fortunately, they kind of worked it out in a way that was as conventional as Legion can ever get. Not that I would ever call Legion conventional, of course.
Yeah, certainly. And we jumped out of the window box and directly to the astral plane. So
there you go. Such is life. So with all that said, let's get right to it. Let's get to Chapter 26, which was actually the, as we were referring to it the week earlier, as the penultimate episode of Legion. Basically, that was the one where David traveled back in time, hoping to help his dad defeat, and as far as David's plan was concerned, kill Amal Farouk. After way too many odd and creepy occurrences, Charles realizes Farouk is a monster. He gets a cake of knowledge from his aforementioned time-tripping son, although he doesn't seem to quite grasp his kid's kind of a monster, too, at least not at this point. Meanwhile, Sid and the Loudermilks showed up at the old family house right around the time David's mom, Gabrielle, was starting to lose it once again. And that's where Sid decides that even if they can't save adult David, they really have to save baby David at all costs. And turns out screwing around with pretty much everyone, both blatantly and subliminally, are those truly creepy, frightening, demonic, I don't know, there are too many adjectives to use about them, those time eaters pop up again. Of course, by the time the episode is completed, they clearly have chosen a side, and it's Farouk's, as they break him out of his little stop-motion picture prison to join forces with himself. All right, that was my synopsis of Chapter 26. I won't have much of one for the next one, just giving everybody a heads up. Let's just get to the discussion of this one. And I, since I've done so much talking, and Brian is so much more pleasant to listen to than I am, what's your first tech takeaway on this one? Where did you want to dive in first on this one?
I thought the clear separation of the story into an A part and a B part of David and his father and Farouk and Sid and Loudermilks and his mom was a curious way to set up the final two acts. Mm-hmm. But it worked for me. And it worked because I think you see, I thought about this, you see that both of David's parts in his parents exposed in these episodes, that Charles gave him his superpowers and his mother may have given him the propensity for mental illness. Mm-hmm. And she does much the same questioning he did early in the show of, am I really seeing this or am I crazy?
Yeah.
So they sort of break the two halves of David into two storylines and play those out and start in this episode with going back to the beginning of how David is attached upon by Farouk and how that happened and Sid warning about what's to come. I thought the mother's portrayal was excellent. And I will say, I started getting used to the actor playing Charles this, and it wasn't as distracting as I complained about before. And I think that's sort of the advantage of a show being watched weekly instead of sequentially, binged. Mm-hmm. Because with that little break in time between episodes, I grew more and more used to him in the role. And so I wasn't as distracted as I complained before. But that basically it. I think the things we've talked about in the past, we had hoped early in the season we'd see the time demons. Little did we know how much we were going to get of them. Man, we got a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Like a ton. And we got in this episode the start of Switch that ultimately pays off in the finale and a little bit more exploration of her, not a lot, but a little. And we see David, I think the scene I thought where Charles had the breakthrough about David was where, he's asked, who is she? And she's just somebody to help me get here. Like Charles sees that David sees her as a tool. And, something I think we talked about before, too, that I think plays out over these episodes is we see Farouk started as evil and worked his way towards being a surprisingly better person. And David started innocent and worked his way towards being more and more evil, which is sort of similar to the arc Lenny's character ran in the show. And I thought that was a unique way to play that out, and I found that surprising. You see Farouk as a younger version, and he's evil. David's younger version is more pleasant, or would have been more pleasant, but we know that story from season one. So we sort of saw those two cast against each other, and really that's what the episodes did, was tell two stories that sort of flowed both halves of David, and one his life in reverse and one his life as it is now. And I thought that was Holly's really designed this as a master meditation on time and what it means, and what does nature nurture mean, and explored a lot of complex issues in this. So I thought the first episode, the penultimate episode that we're discussing, set it up really well. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the time demons quite a bit, seeing the menace that they continue to bring. And man, they're just creepy. I mean, that cut stop animation is really affecting. And we got more Rachel Keller. She really got to shine in the last two episodes, and you and I both are big fans of what she's done on the show. And we finally got time with the Loudermilks, and some meaningful time with the Loudermilks. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah, the way I liked how you described the splitting of the storylines, as far as we're talking about the penultimate episode, being like the two sides of David because of what, you know, what he got from his father and what he presumably got from his mother, which made him the person that he is today, so to speak, or throughout his life. Even although without them there to nurture him, it's very interesting how there's certainly a nature versus nurture thing going on here with David. Although, to the detriment of the series overall, the fact that they really never explored anything with David's adopted parents. So it was never, we saw all those glimpses and flashes and moments of him at different stages of his childhood and in his teenage years. But other than his interactions with his sister, who seems to be long forgotten now. I mean, I know she's dead, but still. So I mean that's something that, you know, if I was gonna, you know, start to pick at some one thing about it, that's kind of an issue I would have with the David character as far as his backstory and what led to him to now, because it muddies that one of the things I think they were trying to put meditate on, as you put it, for this series overall. But the other thing, the other reason I really like the splitting of it is because, you know, at a certain point, I mean, although David is ostensibly the main character of the series, Sid's like, you know, he's one and Sid's like 1A. So I like the idea that, you know, she had her significant portion, half perhaps even, I didn't time it, you know, at least a good 40 to 50% of the episode was on what was going on with Sid at the house with the Loudermilks and Gabrielle and whatever. So I like that we got that much, as you said, that much screen time with her.
I was just going to say, literally, if you want to be literal about the nature nurture, you know, the scenes in the home are the nurture part and the nature part is his dad, who he never really knew. And it's that stark in the setup of the nature nurture. And another interesting parallel is, I thought in the penultimate episode, was the Monkey King. And the Monkey King had all those people in his head. The girl keeps the people in her head. Right. And you see, a device that's very similar to what David has going on in his head that's a parallel in Farouk's life. So there are these parallels of powerful people and what makes them make choices and what makes them go wrong or do right. I think the key that goes back to the previous episode, and that is, you know, it's not us versus them, it's us and them. Right. And that ties that together, that thread nicely together too. I mean, it was pretty heavy ruminations about nature, nurture and time and what it all means.
Right. I thought the stuff between, well, the monkey was basically the original king or ruler of that land, was trapped inside, you know, had basically been turned into that monkey.
Right.
Was the way I took it. And I also took Farouk's punishment of, you know, either the, I don't know if that was supposed to represent the entire populace or a significant portion of them or those who opposed him, whatever. And I thought they were essentially trapped, you know, within the confines of that girl on her mind.
Yes.
So she kind of represented a form of a prison for them. And I think there's a certain point, I might have been in the finale, there's a line that said, I think, by Farouk, about the idea of being inside David. You know, at one point it felt like it was a prison for him, but until maybe then it wasn't, because he grew to love him or something like that.
Right, right.
Kind of to decide which half of the episode I kind of want to say a couple little things about first. Let's talk about the Sid and Gabriel stuff first. I agree. Obviously, Rachel Keller can, in my mind, can do no wrong on this in this show. I really, that conversation that she has with Gabrielle, the way it's written so precisely, how she really toes the line without really out and out revealing who or what she is. And even when she does make some references to, you know, saving the world or whatever, she still doesn't go out and out to reveal who and what they are.
Right.
Because you're dealing with a woman who already is obviously has a certain amount of instability about her. She's right. Scarred. She's, she's kind of in many ways, one of the more heartbreaking characters we've seen in the entire run of this show, because her experiences from the war had scarred her so severely. You know, one can't help but wonder, maybe, and it does get brought up in the next episode briefly and done in a kind of a lovey-dovey way, but being more practical about it, you kind of wonder if Charles taking her away from the institution might not have ever been the best thing for her. You know? I mean, that obviously that's debatable, but, you know, it's worrisome the way she was.
Well, you certainly get the idea that she's self-aware enough to know that he shouldn't have left her alone that long.
Right.
He shouldn't have been gone that long. Like, taking her away, whether he should have done that or not, he definitely shouldn't have flown to Morocco and left her all alone.
Absolutely. And the fact that they have that big house, whatever, and that's not even, like, not that it really would have made much of a difference, I grant you, but there's not even, like, help or staff there. So
right.
He really, truly did leave her alone. And, yeah, I absolutely agree that I don't think he was. I think maybe, although we saw, you know, a certain amount of character evolution, just even within these two episodes, be it of David or Farouk, whatever, I think we actually saw that with Charles as well. I think, and maybe seeing what he did and what happened to his future son and whatever had that much of an impact. But we'll probably discuss that more so in the when we talk about the finale. Was there anything else I want to say about that? Well, I love the whole thing with the, just to mention, because the time it is, we're seeing more with the, at the house, there's that shot where it looks like they're all coming out of the furnace.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Even though Holly has done quite a bit to distance what this show is from anything one has previously seen in the comic book genre, the way that shot, that camera movement, and then where it goes down to the basement or the sub-basement where the furnace is and they're coming out, felt beautifully comic booky to me. As well as very, very horrific at the same time. Like a horror comic, maybe. So I really enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, and I thought the Farouk coming out of the picture was shot in a way that sort of looked like very much like an independent type comic.
Yeah.
That wasn't colored. And him stepping out of that into the world and his journey. I mean, a lot of the I thought both episodes did a good job of going back and hitting the points of the things that were, you know, at least memorable about this season, you know, the sort of silent movie aspect of the nowhere land, you know, where Farouk escapes from with the help of the time demons. We see that. We see a lot of things. And I guess my final comment would be the one thing I thought that put such a that was, if you had any question about, like, was Holly throwing in the kitchen sink, was they even had the, you know, would you kill Hitler's baby discussion. You know, like, Carrie says, well, we just go kill the baby. Like, no, why? Because you don't kill a baby. I mean,
I was so happy that they put that in there, because, you know, someone has to think that. Because that is the classic, you know, time travel question. You know, would you kill killing Hitler as a baby? I mean, they even did it in the extended cut of Deadpool 2. Trying to think of what more I had to say about it. Well, flipping back to what was going on with David and Charles and the Farouks. Oh, by the way, I really love the fact that they really, and a lot of credit should go to the actor as well, and I have forgotten his name. It's not in front of me, and I'm not looking it up. Sorry, guys. But the fellow who plays Farouk. The difference between the Farouk of years ago and the current day Farouk, was substantial. And it's kind of funny. You were talking earlier about Farouk becoming something along the lines of him becoming like a better person. It's hard for me to quite go along with, say, quite that way, because I don't want to forget the things that Farouk did not that long ago. I mean, his torturous treatment of Lenny wasn't that long ago, you know?
Right.
But there is something to be said. There is still truth in what you said. Because he, maybe because of based on what he's seen, or maybe because he has come to genuinely view David as sort of like a son, and it's almost like, look what I hath wrought, kind of a thing. In a weird, you know, because obviously you've got, you know, since there is no adopted father ever, David's two fathers, I mean, the abandonment of one and the torturous treatment within his brain by the other have led to David being what he's become. And I think they both share that responsibility, and I think they both realize it, you know, one in this episode and one maybe the subsequent episode.
Yeah, I think that's right.
The only thing I wanted to say about, I know, and you've led off with talking about your previous issues with the actor, is it Harry Lloyd?
Yes.
Playing Charles and having to get over that because of we knew him so well from Counterpoint, whatever. The thing I kind of liked about what they did and with that casting, and like I say, I love it, but I definitely liked it the more I thought about it, is because we've seen versions of Charles Xavier in live action before a few times now, whether it be the older Patrick Stewart version or the somewhat younger James McAvoy, is that the actor's name?
Yeah.
His version, whatever. And obviously, there's been animated versions, and you know, and I wouldn't be surprised if there is another live action version or two out there that I'm not thinking of because I don't remember it. The thing I liked about this is that we got a very different sort of Charles Xavier than I think we would have imagined whenever we were thinking if they were ever going to have him on the series, because there was something just a bit more delicate, a bit more bewildered, a bit more naive, maybe. These are all things I don't associate with, you know, quote unquote Professor X. But then I realized he's not a kid, but he's supposed to be what, in his 20s at this point. They're definitely depicting him as being very young at this point. You know, at most he's in his early 30s. I don't know. Since they really play around with years and ages on this show, I don't know. It's really hard to say. You know, you start thinking about it, like, that doesn't make any sense. Oliver should be, no, just don't think about it.
He definitely lacks the wisdom and the sense of invincibility that you typically associate with Charles. He seems to be unsure and seems vulnerable.
Right, very much so. And one has to think that, you know, obviously time and experience with his own abilities, because he's just, I think he's still learning what he can do at this point. And he still needs to be, quite frankly, he still needs to be exposed to other mutants. You know, this is, you know, I think Farouk was the first one he went to go find, that he found, whatever. But more than all of that, Professor X, in my to my recollection, be it in the comics or on the screen, he's always been kind of the man in control. And he's definitely not a man in control at this point in his life. He's, you know, when he, his whole business of going to Morocco. And I love that you think he would be questioning the craziness around it a lot more than he is. It's because it's from the moment he arrives there, there's a certain surreal, dreamlike quality to everything that happens to him. And he kind of just goes along with it. And I remember thinking, that's kind of interesting. You'd think he'd be a bit more, you know, you think he'd be a bit more British about it.
Well, I certainly would be creeped the hell out if I showed up somewhere and someone had a like full portrait of me painted. Yeah. That's creepy as hell. Like,
I love that.
Yeah, it was great. And the flourishes of the weirdness of that world, him accepting it is certainly something an older Charles would have questioned. He sort of just seems excited to meet another person who yes. he feels is like him, and that's what he's
right.
searching for. And so I like that quality of it. I love the look like of that shot. That it definitely frames the time and gives you a sense that it was when he was really young. I mean, the look of the plane, it looks like, you know, a Raiders of the Lost Ark
type right.
plane in the background, the car. But the circumspection of the driver and when Charles is asking him questions, and he's not really giving him answers about the king. He just says the king, or I think he says the king. I'm trying to remember if I got that wrong, please. Comment and blame me, Brian, if I got that wrong.
Please, I'm usually that guy, so don't worry about it.
Charles always has a plan and is seemingly unflappable, and this Charles is open to a new experience, has no plan, and is not suspicious or doesn't have a backup. He's just going into something, and that's not a Charles we've seen.
Right. Just by you mentioning the look of things, like something out of Raiders of the Lost Ark, whatever. I was laughing at certain things because I kept going, okay, they established at some point that David is, I think, is actually said somewhere in the series, he's like 31 or 32. And if this is taking place now, like, this should be like the late 80s. Mm-hmm. Nothing looks like the late... Or she just got out of the war. Like, wait, is David like 70 years old? It makes no sense. One little fun thing before we move on, I just wanted to mention it only because it's the kind of thing one only picks up on because if you leave the captioning on, which I do because, you know, if I'm watching late at night, I also don't want to miss dialogue or whatever. And they've done this in previous seasons. And I get such a kick out of it. And people who don't have the captioning on, which probably most people, are just not aware of this. Whenever they have scenes, and there certainly there's scenes in both episodes, but specifically the penultimate episode, where we get multiple Davids, that all their names are spelled differently. So one David, his name is spelled D-I-V-A-D. Another David is spelled just DVD. It's just different versions. It's just like Scrabble, just mixing up their letters in some form or another. It's kind of goofy, but I just would love to see the script, you know, to see how many there are in there. That's pretty much it. Again, it was a great, in my estimation, and yours as well, it seems, a really great part one because it certainly set the stage while being probably one of the more dread-filled, tension-filled episodes that we've had of the series. I mean, this, and not that there haven't been others, but this one was really kind of raising the bar and really making it clear, oh boy, next episode's really going to be something, which is funny, which we're going to get to in a second, I think, actually. I thought it was definitely one of the better episodes of the season, if not the best. I mean, it's definitely in that category.
No, I totally agree with you there.
All right, so why don't we then dovetail from here to that final chapter, so we can finally start talking about how this series resolved itself and how we resolved to look back at the series. So that would be chapter 27, the final chapter of Legion. Like I said, I did not put together a little wrap-up synopsis of the episode, because you all watched it. But basically, this is the one that we've been waiting for, the eventual confrontation between David and Farouk. And what we weren't expecting is that it was also going to be, it's going to be two Farouks and David and Charles. Although things don't go quite the way many of us might have anticipated. Thank you, Noah Hawley. And meanwhile, much as in the first episode, crazy stuff is still going on at the Xavier house, while Sid is trying to do everything she can to keep baby David safe. And then things go in a very different direction than I think most of us would have expected. So with that said, let's start talking about that. And we can, if you want to plunge right into that different direction, feel free, or wherever you want to go with this one, Brian.
I will say you and I have talked, and we fully expected to have our expectations subverted. And they were. Totally. But we got a lot of what has made this show enjoyable in the process. And I will say I liked what the finale did. I didn't love it because I had a sense there were missed opportunities. You know, early in this season, we sort of shed Tonami and Clark. We never went back to David's sister. We never, there are threads that I know in telling a story, you can't fix everything, but I thought there were some missed opportunities. But with the core that the show decided to stick with, I thought it told a good story. I didn't totally love it because there was sort of a time reset, and when there's a time reset of this kind, it's, you always have the question of what has been done with the story and what we've invested in it, and the whole story was basically to reset everything back to a new beginning. I didn't love that because I've sort of seen that before. But I didn't hate it. I thought it was good. And I will say that in a show that's used incredible music, and I think you and I both have loved some of the music choices, that the montage over Pink Floyd's Mother may be my favorite montage of the whole show, that we see Carrie absolutely kicking butt as she grows older. We see David singing it so, you know, poignantly to his mom. And I love that montage. I thought the use of the music was great. And the final thought I have, it was interesting that in the previous episode, Farouk's sort of word of power was, you shouldn't have come here. And at the end, like, yeah, they should have come there. Like that was not true at all. Had they not come there, existence would have been destroyed. The world would have been destroyed. But by coming there and reaching the agreement they reached, the world was saved with the sacrifice of David and Sid. And so I was at least happy that that version and David and Sid don't get a nice, clean, happy ending. And I particularly liked the line where David said, you know, so you cared, why did you come back here? And she says, like, I did you. And she did it for baby David. And I like that distinction that he didn't get a pass for what he'd done, and he didn't get that tidy ending.
Right.
So those were my thoughts in general. Loved the montage. Loved that we got Carrie and Carrie. And I thought it was funny that, you know, Carrie has always called older Carrie old man. And, like, she ages in the fight with the time demon, seemingly almost as if everyone she kills ages her and grows old. But I enjoyed it. I thought it told a good story. It was done well. And particularly, I think what did it for me is the interaction with Rachel Keller, with Sid, as, you know, her concern only to save this child, this one child, and that relationship with David and his mother, and encouraging them to nurture David and to not put him in a world where he grows up the way he grew up before. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I'm not hating it at all. I didn't totally love it, but I liked it quite a bit.
Got it. I'm probably essentially on the same page as you, I think. Certain things I decided by the time we got to this episode, I just weren't going to let bother me anymore. I just had to look at it as an inherent, for lack of a better, nicer way to put it, an inherent flaw of the series. There were always going to be characters that they just didn't bother to do very much with. So in a sense, they either were ciphers, or they were just underdeveloped or underserviced. Such as the aforementioned Patonomy and Clark. And we got a little bit of Clark that one time. You know, it was kind of cool, and we really liked that actor, but they kind of just disposed of him, you know, like just flicking him away. Patonomy, feels like we got something more with him maybe way back in season one, because he had a very interesting backstory. But screwing him over, I think, started back in season two. But, you know, it reminds me of when we would talk about shows, or like when me and Dan would talk about shows, like say True Detective or something, and, you know, like season one specifically, where you can concentrate on the positive, which was the work they did on those two main characters in that series were superlative and really well done, well acted, the story was great, blah, blah, blah. If you start spreading around to all the other characters, you realize they didn't really do much with the other characters. They just kind of took up screen, you know, just for something for these other characters to play off. And to a certain extent, that might have been what happened here with some of those aforementioned characters, unfortunately. But as you said, I do applaud the decision to, at least they included the Loudermilks as being part of this final journey here. I was actually surprised they did as good a job with them, because I was very worried that they were going to kind of get the short end of the stick, like many other characters have. But there was a certain lovely poignancy with what they did with the Loudermilks, with Carrie and Kerry. And yeah, the thing about, you know, calling him old man and now I'll just call you brother, was very touching. And it's interesting, again, it's one of those, maybe we don't want to think about it too strongly, because it's one of those wacky time things, like, wait, does that all get changed too? It seemed like that wasn't going to get changed. And one can spend hours trying to explain that away, and I'm just going to say, you know what, it's just a time paradox, which is we're just going to, you just got to let it go. But it seemed to me that the implication was they're going to remain as the way they are here, even if they are going to make it through a doorway and get back to their own time, even though that wasn't very clear if that was going to happen either, quite frankly. I thought they did a really nice job with that. You're right. And one of your major points I am in total agreement with, we've seen time reset things before. That's yet another trope or staple of time travel stories. And I don't mind it being done if it's done well. And I've seen it done well in a number of movies and even a couple TV shows. It's usually better in movies than TV shows, but whatever. I realized that someone, that's where they have to go with this. And I decided I could accept it, because it was neither forgiving nor forgetting what David had done.
Right.
Because there is a consequence for this. And the consequence is not just him sacrificing his current existence as well as Sid's, because Sid's going to have a great life. She even says it herself. I love her confidence when she says that. Like, she's like, I know. I'm gonna have an amazing life. Switch even says she's gonna have a glorious life, you know, which is great for Sid because she really needs it. But the tragedy for David is like he, despite what he did to it and what happened with it, he did find love, and now he's lost it, and he's never gonna meet her. He's probably
right.
There's no reason to ever believe he'll ever meet her again. So who knows? So he is, and in his mind, since he never accepted responsibility, true responsibility for what he did, he's not just sacrificing his own existence at this point, you know, our current plane of existence. He's sacrificing the one thing he thought was his anchor, was his love with Sid. So I kind of like that. And like you said, the fact that what she was doing was for that baby and not for that grown version of David. And even though I think she had the knowledge that by protecting this baby, that would inevitably erase her, because things are going to have to change. Because the thing is, if we look at David as being, you know, he inherited his abilities, the mutant gene from his father, but his mother's mental issues could have been communicated genetically as well. Again, since none of that is ever clearly said, we just have to interpret that ourselves. But the whole thing with him growing up, he was led to believe that he, you know, they kind of like shied away from whether he ever had powers or not. They just made him believe that he just had mental issues. And they would, they would give him drugs, run drugs, and then he would flare up and then eventually end up in an institution. The hope is now that he's with a father who knows what he is and has this ability to love, that's going to be the nurturing part. And he's going to be with a father that's going to actually guide him and show him how. And then that becomes part of the whole knowing, just having your basic X-Men knowledge. It's like Professor X is a teacher. You know, he deals not just with adults who are, you know, the X-Men, he deals with kids, you know, children who are mutants and growing up. That's his thing. So the fact that he would actually have a son to do that with just makes perfect sense. So it's possible that the new version of David will not become the monster that he became.
Right.
So.
No, I mean, the Professor X excels at either teaching people to control their power so they're not a danger and a threat to society at large, or to protect them and shield them from people who would try to manipulate them, use them in a way. And that's precisely what David needs. And I think he sees in this the power David possesses. David clearly illustrates in his incarnation that manifests to him how powerful he is. Because we see Charles doesn't even realize the full potentiality of the astral plane. And Farouk sort of says, you know, oh, how quaint, when he pulls the knife.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't realize that David's far advanced from where Charles will end up. And so I think he knows what David would be possible for him to do. And so I think that reset makes sense if Charles is there to help guide him on the part of controlling his powers.
Right.
And so I think I totally agree. I think your analysis is we're not that far apart. I think we're actually pretty close on our analysis of it.
It's interesting. Also, one of the things about this finale was it was kind of like no pun intended for the previous episodes, kind of like you got your cake and you could eat it too. Because on one hand, we did get, you know, confrontation/battling between David and, you know, younger Farouk, who is still the more brash, you know, intense, maybe even guided by emotions more so than his older self would be. And so we got some kind of marvelous moments there, you know, with the multiple Davids coming out of all the doors, which is brilliant and looked great. All the way to the straight jacket. I loved him throwing off the straight jacket and it being Farouk.
That was
great concept, great idea, just well done. But then you have the negotiation between Charles and the older Farouk. Again, like sharing I guess that was a beer. I'm not really sure what kind of, you know, what kind of Foster's, I'm not sure. But I think when we mentioned before about Holly kind of subverting our expectations, we probably had both prepared ourselves for this show is not going to have a happy ending.
Right.
So although there may be a tragic note here or there, by and large, they kind of ended on a hopeful ending.
Mm-hmm.
Which, in a weird way, that there's something kind of jarring about that for this series. And it's funny, this is me riffing. It's funny because I mentioned True Detective before, and I never thought I'd put those two shows together. But that was kind of some people's issue, mine even, whatever, with the very end of season one of True Detective, where you had a character who had been, you know, Mr. Dour and, you know, meditating on, you know, life and death, whatever, actually having kind of a weird form of, you know, epiphany and hope at the end of that series, if I recall. And that's kind of the way Legion ended. It was like, oh, it kind of sort of gave some happy endings here. Is that what just happened? You know, I mean, they didn't end up in a church and all went off to heaven together, but...
And they weren't dead the whole time.
They were not dead the whole time.
Just joking.
But they're dead now. But now they're to be alive again. And I guess Sid's going to have her third childhood.
Well, I think that part of the problem that I referenced earlier is it's bittersweet because I think all of the... I guess you could see it as a happy ending in that the whole purpose of the Loudermilks and Clark and those was to save the world from David.
Yes.
And they achieved that. So even if they're not reset and don't get a do-over, they did accomplish their objective. And clearly they were all ready to sacrifice to do that. And so they won that battle. But the sort of unanswered questions of what happens to them, and I, like you, think none of it changes for any of them. The only victory for them is that they did what they set out to do. And I guess the question I had and the thought I had was, why did this conversation wait until now? And I guess it took David's own father to be the intermediary so it could happen. So one of the subversions of expectations is that it was just basically a conversation between David's two quote unquote fathers that leads to the ending. And then in a classic, you know, jokingly, we said this too, callback, give us another point. Turns out Switch was somewhat of an alien type creature or god or something unexpected. And we find out, and again, to go with the show, she sees her father in person and not, I thought that was kind of a neat moment where he said, I don't need my carapace and you don't need yours either. And she looks back and sees where she's left her body.
Right. That was interesting. I felt like he was digging into kind of like an interesting little sci-fi trope of kind of like the person evolving to the next plane of existence,
right?
And
right.
that she is now as I think her father said, a fourth dimensional being,
right?
Which actually makes a weird kind of sense. They were kind of cute about it. Like, she lost her baby teeth.
Right.
It's like, all right, like, we're going to explain that away. Okay.
And now she has some cute pet time demons she can control. So.
Yes, that's true.
What kid wouldn't want time demons? I mean.
She could send them over to Central City. Oh, that'd be so awesome. Anyway. Yeah, and the thing with Switch, I mean, we did spend a bit of time with her, certainly spent a lot of time with her in this specific episode, and then off and on during the course of the season. Still, it's kind of like what you were saying before when David is talking to his father, Charles, I mean, of course, and Charles realizes that he was just using this woman as a tool in order to travel back in time and such, and not really being overly empathetic to her situation. I think that kind of is the way the character was treated overall, although they kind of tidied it up at the end there. You know, just like, okay, but we're giving her a break because she's become this, as you say, like this godlike creature who exists in time, and the fact that she felt, you know, so isolated in her life and in her existence to the point where she questioned whether she was even human or a robot, you know, as far as her, like, part of her father's collection, or her father would talk to her, like, through a TV, it seemed, if I recall. I think that was supposed to be her father. And now they're actually so a lot of, it's like, maybe it's a running theme of, like, reunions with her, or fixing up daddy issues in this episode.
Right.
Which is, then it goes back to being Sid, like, oh, but Sid had a really nice dad a couple episodes ago, and Oliver. But, but maybe less talking as fathers, just maybe it's more family, because this seemed to be a theme of families kind of finding themselves again and bonding throughout this episode, and by the end of the series, whether it be David with his own actual parents, or what we saw happen with Sid already, and of course the Loudermilks. I'd love to see their parents. So, overall, I definitely liked it. I didn't mention it myself, and shame on me, but you already discussed it rather succinctly and well. I love the Pink Floyd sequence, and it's one of those things where I actually posted something on Facebook recently, where I realized that one other niche kind of audience that I would recommend Legion to, because Legion is not a show I would recommend to everybody. It's just, I know a lot of people who just wouldn't get it or wouldn't have the patience for it, whatever. But one audience segment was like, you know, if you're like a big Pink Floyd fan, you might want to watch Legion.
Because absolutely.
Pink Floyd has played a part in this show from the get-go. I mean, the fact that you named your female lead Syd Barrett to begin with, you know, former main guy in Pink Floyd, you know,
right,
was pretty much a hint. And then we already had that big battle scene in a previous season using Floyd. And I think I read somewhere that when they were doing season one, in Holly's mind, he was thinking a lot of Dark Side of the Moon, which is great because I'm Mr. Cliche, I know, because everyone always picks, you know, Animals or this one or that one. Dark Side of the Moon is still my favorite Pink Floyd album, just because it just is. It's everything from Clockworks on, it has that kind of weird Pink Floyd kind of feel to it. So the Mother song, and as you say, describe it, montage, whatever, was lovely. And it's David again communicating through song.
Mm-hmm.
Which has been a running thing with his character. So that was, and I'd almost want to smack them for being so on the nose with it, but it worked so well, it didn't bother me.
It was one of those moments that when you're watching something and it really does, for a second, you just stop thinking about it and you're engrossed by it. I was just completely engrossed, and like after like probably 15 seconds, I was like, "I freaking love this! This is amazing!" And
that
encapsulates what, if you liked this show and stuck with it, that sequence had the bits and parts of this show that we love, and that is the amazing cinematography, the great art direction, good music choice, and some sort of higher meaning attached to the actions people take. And that encapsulated it so perfectly. And you know, I believe that was Dan Stevens singing. I know he's a pretty good singer and has sung before, and I'm pretty confident that's him. And I thought that the execution of the song wasn't tacky. It wasn't cheesy. It was done well. And I just thought it was, I thought it was a gorgeous bit of TV.
Yeah. It's the one thing more so than anything else in the episode that actually I felt, actually felt affected me emotionally. That mm-hmm. I actually got a little misty. I mean, I'm an easy crier, so it's not, it may not be saying that much, but I was very taken with it, and so it definitely worked. And it's one of those things, once it did, it's like, of course Holly had to have a scene like this in the final mm-hmm. episode. You had to. Because, and it's funny, because if you think about, you know, every season, there's always at least one, if not more, you know, really significant use of music, you know, that a scene is scored to. And so that it acts as kind of like, whether it be a montage or whatever. Obviously, you know, the whole bolero thing back in season one, you know, still to this day, wow. Mm-hmm. The use of the Pink Floyd song in last season during, I think it was in the finale, if I'm not mistaken. I think, I could be wrong about this, so again, I apologize if I'm totally messing up my facts here. I feel like both the finale for season two and now here season three, i.e. the series finale, both featured a Pink Floyd song, except I think in season two it was the actual track, and this one I agree. I do think that was Dan Stevens singing, as well as the actress who plays his mother. And if it wasn't them, it really felt like it was, so it still works. Yeah. So the way I would look at it, there aren't going to be that many episodes of TV that I'm ever going to say I love anyway. But I think what was more important was the question was whether or not we were satisfied with it. I was satisfied with it. I can think of things, issues I have with the series overall, with certain characters or most of season, or a good portion of season two, whatever. But I felt they kind of rebounded to a certain extent this season, and I was satisfied with the ending, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I was satisfied by it. And it's funny. It's kind of funny to me that you particularly like Dark Side of the Moon, because you know, that album is sort of, you know, a tribute to Syd Barrett. And right. And I think in some interviews, Holly has sort of cited that as a seminal inspiration for him. And this show, if you like Pink Floyd, like you said, it's there. And I love Pink Floyd. You know, I think you and I are of similar age. Mm-hmm. I was in the '80s, and you know, I remember when Pink Floyd broke up, I was, you know, 11, 12 years old, but I knew who they were. The Wall was the biggest thing in the world. I think maybe I was 13, 83. I think, wasn't it 83? I think the final cut came out, and I remember seeing it in a record store. And they were a big deal. I mean, you know, Zeppelin broke up, Pink Floyd broke up, and those were the biggest bands in the world. And in my little record store here in Kentucky, they had Pink Floyd albums. And, you know, so I didn't, you know, I didn't have to travel to find their music. But I felt satisfied by the finale. I liked it a whole hell of a lot more than I had problems with it. But I think as we transition and talk about our feelings about the show overall, I think it's a microcosm of what we feel, is that I really liked it. But just like a really great album, you know, there are some misses, and I think there were some missed chances. And I think that this show, season two, hurt this show in that it went some directions that it couldn't quite get back in the right spaces to finish the story in maybe a way that I would have liked to have seen. I still think anyone should watch it. If you if you enjoy it, stick through it. Season three, I thought was a nice recovery. And overall, if you enjoy the sort of David Lynch style of really artsy, really taking chances, doing things, TV making, I think this is a show I would recommend. If you're somebody who likes procedurals, this probably isn't your bag of tea.
Right. Yeah, I guess I would pretty much go along with that. I think, unfortunately, the show had a sophomore slump, and I think Hawley got a little ahead of himself in season two. Who knows, maybe he was even trying to compete with the new Twin Peaks on Showtime, or he had heard about that, I don't know. But somehow, his season three of Fargo and season two of Legion were his lesser efforts, I thought. Maybe they both contaminated each other somehow. But I think they course corrected as best they could for this season. And some of the decisions they made, I think, worked really well. Really stripping the story down to its essentials and not getting too caught up in these, inconsequential tangents, which will never be, which either don't get resolved or get resolved in a kind of kind of way, which is what I felt kept happening in season two. Melody and that goddamn Minotaur and whatever. So it's one of those things where it's like, if I was, grading really simply, it's like, love season one. It's an A. Did I pick it as my number one show that year? I think I did. That means it's an A+. A+ for season one. Season two, if I'm going to be nice, I'll say B-. If I want to be mean, I'll say C+. Last season, solid B. Recovered from season two. Was it able to hit the heights of the first season? No. But, you were lacking some really fun part. We had Oliver for one episode. For example, so you're missing that kind of fun factor. You didn't really do much with Clark, for example, and he's like a really fun actor and an interesting character. Things like that really kind of like little takeaways. But it was, as far as character development, something the show had not excelled at. I thought they did a decent job of that in season three, and that's one of the things that they kind of helped it. Whether it be the Lenny character or David's character, or the older Farouk, or what have you. So I think overall, I'm like you. I would recommend the show to certain people, not necessarily everybody. I wouldn't necessarily. It's not just people who watch procedurals, because I know people watch procedurals, but they can also watch a show like Breaking Bad or whatever.
Oh, sure.
But I think I would put it in a way like, I think if you're someone who has more patience when it comes to watching television, where you don't mind something, number one, taking its time, and number two, being gloriously incoherent at times, then maybe it's the show for you. But I don't know. I have a close friend who loves season one, and they watch her and her husband, they watch season two. And they bailed after season two because they just didn't like the direction the show went in.
Right.
That was what happened with David. And, nothing I say is going to convince them to come back to it. I've told them it's better, but they're not going to listen. It's too much TV to watch. They're not going to listen.
And I think you and I both completely understand why people would have done that. I was higher on season two than even you were. I thought the way I would describe this show to someone is it's like jazz. There are people who love jazz and love especially like the non swing jazz, but like the real, like Miles Davis. There are people who can put on a Miles Davis record and listen to it start to finish. And then there are people who, if you don't have a song structure that is verse chorus, that they don't like that kind of music. It doesn't speak to them. And Legion is very much jazz in that there are portions of it where there's a recognizable melody and a sort of similar song structure to what you know and you recognize and you like. And then there's just some improvisation and some weird stuff that if you're not into that, you won't like it and you won't get it. But I think, you know, that what I found was this season two got more into the psychedelic for its sake. And it came back to the heart of the story in season three. And the strength in season one for us was the bond of the Loudermilks was Rachel Keller. And, you know, seeing Sid and seeing Aubrey Plaza and the heart of those characters, David's sister and that relationship. And season two got wacky and it really started playing the non-melodic jazz that freaks people out. And some of it's really enjoyable. Some of it, eh.
Some of it's women in mustaches, you know. Whatever.
Right. So, you know, if in season three got back to heart and emotion and family, and I thought it was a success. I thought, you know, season one for you and I both, we loved it. Season two, I gave a B, some of it maybe a B minus, and some of those episodes probably were a B plus.
It definitely had stand out moments. It's just overall, we've talked about season two a lot already.
Right. But season three, I would give season three an A minus or a B plus. Probably leaning more towards the B plus, but I would say I don't regret watching the show. I stuck with it. I'm glad I did. I looked forward to it each week, and I've enjoyed podcasting about it with you. It had a lot of neat things. You and I talked before the season that we weren't sure if, you know, we'd do it all the way through, because at the end of season two, you weren't sure you wanted to put the time in to do a podcast about it.
And right.
I'm glad that it hooked you and we stuck with it and got to talk about it because I did enjoy it. And I hope that as time evolves, that other people go find it and enjoy it and appreciate it, because there's some beautiful filmmaking on this show. There's some great performances and there are some questions asked. And then there's just some crazy risks taken. And I think in a world where every superhero movie is being made and they're probably becoming increasingly more and more sanitized and Disneyized, it's nice to see a superhero story that has TVMA as a rating and takes chances. And I appreciated that about it. And I enjoyed talking about it with you, Scott.
Oh, I'm all touched again. I feel like I should be playing a Pink Floyd song during this.
I started calling you Scott. Now I'll call you brother.
Oh God! All right, that okay. You know what? Now I don't want to talk about Legion anymore. You've said it all. I like the jazz thing. Very good. My final take on it was when I stand back and look at it. If nothing else, the entire three seasons, I feel, stands like a work of art. Mm-hmm. And which leaves it's and much more so than most television series, because there's a lot that's, you know, open to interpretation. There's a lot that will either work for some, not work for others. It's not necessarily something that's going to have broad appeal, but it's something that could be artistic and audacious and do things and show us things that we had not quite seen on television before. And it had moments of greatness and it had moments of, you know, what was that? And unfortunately in season two, there was a few too many like, why is he bothering with this? Mm-hmm. which is funny, because I've mentioned the David Lynch thing a lot with him. I think Lynch is definitely an influence on Hawley for the series. And I'll admit, unlike some friends of mine, I mean, I'm a David Lynch fan, but I can also lose patience with David Lynch. And those excesses don't always work for me. although I start to laugh at them at a certain point where I realize what he's doing. Holly kind of touches on that a little bit in a very different way. Lynch does it more in a maddeningly, this is taking so much time, I'm going to kill you kind of a way. And Holly does it in a more of a, well, why is he doing that? And that's, you know, an issue one could have, like, sometimes the show might have been a bit more style over substance, which was funny because you could have, that, to have a show that was about style over substance at times, and yet be very, as you were using the phrase, meditating on really bigger issues, and being very close to, so close to being just a little bit pretentious, but never, always just towing that line, but never quite falling into that chasm, was, oh, I'm not watching this crap anymore. But, I liked the finale. I liked the show. I liked the season. Worked for me. Glad I got to podcast about it. Glad that you were able to join me. Sorry it had to be done in such a no-frills way, but a certain podcaster here never learned how to do all the post-production like Dan usually does on the other side of the country, or middle of the country, wherever the hell he lives now. I'm just all thumbs when it comes to trying to figure that stuff out, because I just never bothered. I'm still using the same crappy Radio Shack microphone I bought years ago. What do you expect? So there you go.
Apology accepted.
All right. With that said, I want to get to the point of wrapping things up here. I will take a minute just a minute, only because you said something. I was not going to talk about it, and then you said something towards the end of your summation of Legion, I feel like I kind of have to mention it now. So you're talking about a show, you know, doing something in the superhero genre that's, what were the words you used? Because I'm going to use my own words in a second. Oh, watching something in the superhero genre that had like a definite MA rating. Mm-hmm. And really kind of going, it's like, just to let everyone, I just finished a series that's on Amazon called
The Boys.
The Boys. Talk about an MA rating.
Yeah, it's pretty dark.
It's super dark, but also funny, which helps, because if it didn't have the humor, then it would just be like, oh, I can't watch this anymore. And it's funny how we keep referring to Noah Hawley like subverting expectations. The Boys in the storyline of that show, which I'm not going to really get into here, it's very subversive. So it's kind of, I recommend it to people who don't necessarily give a goddamn about superhero shows, because it's a very compelling, bingeable show. It's only 8 episodes, if I recall. There are a handful of really good actors in that series. You got your Carl Urban.
Carl Urban,
who, you know, did the best Bones impression of anyone I've ever seen in the last 40 years in the Star Trek films. It was a very good Judge Dredd, and he's really good in this. Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan apparently had a son, and he's acting, and he's in this movie. I mean, in this series, it's really good. And there's going to be if you guys watch it, I think it's like episode 4, there's a scene where you're like going, oh, they're not going to, oh no, oh Lord. It's just how,
yeah.
You realize just how screwed up the show really is. Can't wait for the next season, which they're already filming. So really great show. Glad I decided to skip a lot of the stuff that's been sitting in all my 3 streaming services. You know, I figured I just wanted to get The Boys out of the way really fast. And I watched most of it all in like a day and a half or so.
I join you in an enthusiastic thumbs up, and it definitely is TVMA.
Oh yeah, that's just be prepared. A lot of splattering. It's a very juicy. It can be a very juicy show at times.
Yeah.
All right. So beyond that, as far as future podcasting plans, I'll be honest with you guys out there, I'm not entirely sure. I know I've mentioned on a few podcasts that we were maybe supposedly going to do a dark podcast. I may actually be the obstacle on this one, because I think everyone else probably does want to do it. But, of course, the more time goes by, the less I care about doing it. It may still happen. You know, maybe if a certain person on the border of Wisconsin and Minnesota kind of pushes me on it. if that's even possible. And I know Mindhunter is going to be released fairly soon on Netflix. I think within the next week or two or so, I think.
Next Friday, maybe?
Next Friday. I feel like, yeah, the 19th, maybe? I don't know. I don't know that I don't have the date in front of me, and I don't want to say a date out there and be wrong about it, but I know it's coming soon. That one I will guarantee there will be a podcast about. That's the one I can guarantee. Dark might be, I don't know. But that one I do definitely, I will make sure I watch that series within the first 24, 48 hours, whatever it is, unless I have plans. But no, I'm just kidding. So I don't know who's going to be joining on that one. We might have the return of Dan. That would be nice, because then we could get cool music to begin and end and podcast with. We shall see. I don't know if you're going to do it. I don't know if Jamie wants to do it. I don't know what's going on. So,
well, just so you know, Mindhunter will be out in less than 48 hours. It's Friday.
Okay, then. So there you go.
So we may not be gone that long.
We'll see. Then it's going to be a matter of everyone having watched it. Because, yes, you know, some folks might have more time to get to something faster than others. We'll see. You know, like, if Dan wants, I think Dan wants to do it. It's just a matter of when he can watch it.
But right.
You never know. Okay, I don't want to ramble anymore. So, if you enjoy this podcast, you will enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page. Join the conversation about shows like Legion, like Mindhunter. People keep posting articles about it there. Very cool. And so many other shows that we tend to chat about there. You can also find us on iTunes. Type in Serious TV Drama Podcast. And you can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. Hell, if you type those words into Google, you'll find us in 18 other places probably. You will. Even YouTube, though, no one views us there. Why? Because we don't do a video thing. We should do a video thing one of these days, but I'm too shy. Anyway, finally, you can also follow us on the Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast, STVD as in Serious TV Drama. I already said when we may or may not be back. Sounds like if Mindhunter is popping out in the next 48 hours, and I'll do one guarantee. We will get the Mindhunter podcast done before the end of this month. That will be done one way or the other. Before Labor Day. Before the high holidays. All right, never mind. But we'll get it done. And that's pretty much it. Brian, I want to thank you for wanting to keep the Legion flag flying and getting pretty much being, not single-handedly, but you know, being one of the main reasons I decided to stick with the doing the podcast for the show. It's been a lot of fun talking to you. I'm glad you were able to carry the weight of conversational patter quite often here. So thank you so much for being there for me and for the podcast and for our listeners.
Well, I really enjoyed it. I do like this show. I hope it finds an audience. And I really enjoyed getting to talk about it with you, Scott. It was fun.
Oh, I'm all touched. And with that, I will say goodnight to you, Brian, and goodnight to all our tens of listeners out there. Anyway, and let me cue up the audio on the stupid phone one last time. Oh, so lame. Lamest podcast out there. Okay. Good night, Brian.
Good night.
Oh, goddamn volume isn't even up. Worst podcast ever.